This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Good evening, my friends. Showboat Money is about to happen live. It's a bit of a workshop. It's a money workshop, I shall say. It's sort of a bird's eye view as to what Jack and I do each and every day as we comb the markets looking for means of protecting assets and building wealth, and interviewing and discussing interesting ideas with smart people is what it's all about. Michael Hainsworth, contributing editor and host of Where's My Jetpack, former host at BNN, the man who used to interview me, hold me over the coals, my turn. Welcome, Michael. Second quarter of the year. First quarter, Jack and I subscribed to a bespoke investment research. And yeah, what's worked in the first quarter is the same stuff that worked last year. Mega cap stocks, high price stocks, high valuation stocks, low dividend stocks. Believe it or not, strong analyst support also favored very well last year and in Q1 of this year. And Q2, off to a bit of a soft start, but the same theme continues. Those mega caps, those high price stocks, which allows me now to pivot over to a name that is not working, and a name that is very sensitive to Michael Hainsworth's heart, is Tesla.
I've warned you about this stock. You laughed at me when I warned you about Tesla.
I laughed with you, my friend, and we actually sold Tesla very well, thank goodness. We had one client fall in love with the stock, held it for a period of time. I said, Jack, you have to call that person back and get them off this trade. And fortunately, the phrase was, don't fall in love with the stock, just like Nortel. And that trigger of Nortel allowed us to sell the stock for him. You know, you fall in love with these names, look out. You allow the tax man, I can't sell the stock, I made too much money, I don't want to pay the tax. Oh, yeah. Don't fall victim to that. When the trend changes, respect the change in trend. I like Michael Hainsworth. I like you, obviously. But I do like Elon Musk. I just think he's an incredible visionary. You know, he's eccentric. So am I. And I'm certainly no
one. He's a fraud and a Nazi.
He's not a fraud.
What are you talking about?
Come on,
he is absolutely a fraud.
Why is Elon a fraud?
When he invested in Tesla, part of the deal for the massive cash injection for that company required the founders of the company to claim that he was a co-founder of the company. That man did not found Tesla. That man did not found PayPal. That man hasn't founded anything in his life except for the Boring Company, which turned out to be an absolute failure. SpaceX, which is, of course, not a failure, but is not doing particularly well in the keeping rockets from blowing up department. And then, of course, Twitter is the most perfect example of a company where there were no guardrails around him. At SpaceX, they have an entire group of people whose sole job is to placate Elon Musk, whereas at Twitter, there is no such thing. And we can see what happens when that man is let loose on society. He runs things into the ground.
Well, let's stay on the social media front. What is it, Jack? Truth Media, Donald Trump's new platform. Come on, let's have some fun with that one. You know, Musk is real, I believe. Let's focus on the former and perhaps future president of the world's most powerful nation, Mr. Donald Trump. He owes billions or half a billion dollars. He owes a lot of money to the courts and to victims. What was his last victim? How much did she get? It's a stupid amount of money.
It's an ongoing saga, Wolf. I think there's more claims coming, too.
A number was recently set. Michael, do you know how much she was awarded?
It was north of $80 million. It was originally closer to $5 million with the proviso that he not open his big fat mouth and disparage her again. He did so immediately after the ruling, standing outside of the courtroom itself. So they hauled him back into court, tacked on a couple of extra dozen million. And as a result, he now owes close to $84 million to just E. Jean Carroll herself.
Okay.
Let alone the fact that he is in the hole for about $500
million. That's the number I'm looking for. Yeah, it's 500. It's a half a billion dollars. What do you think of his new social platform, Michael? Is it will he sell advertising? Is it an advertising machine, and maybe subscription-based model down the road? We'll see. Is he going to generate revenue from this thing?
Absolutely not. It's replaced Tesla and GameStop as a meme stock. This isn't a real stock. You've heard of pump and dump. It's now Trump and dump. $97.54 at the height, now cut in half. Trump holds about $3.8 billion worth of the shares. Trump is locked up for 6 months after the IPO, but the board could vote to make a special dispensation now that he's suing the two co-founders of the SPAC that made DJT possible in the first place. Maybe that's not going to happen after all. But to your point, revenue, $4 million. Losses in just the last 9 months, nearly $60 million. And the prospectus warns losses will continue amid greater profitability challenges in the foreseeable future as it tries to expand its user base. But the problem is it's not expanding its user base. It admitted it may never disclose key performance data like signups, impressions, average revenue per user. When Facebook IPO'd, 854 million active users. Twitter, 215 million active users. DJT has 9 million users, but only 2 million actively use it. And that is declining as well, because really the only person to benefit from Truth Social is Trump.
Of course.
It's a vacuum. The problem is it's filled with trolls, but they don't have anybody to fight, because reasonable human beings aren't on Truth Social. So now they're trying to migrate over to things like the Meta Threads platform, which is the competitor to Twitter. But the Meta Threads platform has a really neat feature. You'll really appreciate this. If somebody makes a snarky comment, Wolfgang, to something you've posted on Threads, there's an option titled Hide for Everyone, which means that troll is screaming into the void, oblivious to the fact that nobody is seeing what they're posting. Because what they want to do is they want to rile you up and engage you. And by this simple feature on Threads, it allows us to mute the trolls and they don't even know it. And so all of those Truth Social people are going, Threads is boring. Well, of course it's boring. We're not fighting with you.
Would you not consider that censorship / whitewashing?
Absolutely not. It would be if you were able to maintain a reasonable discourse with a MAGA person, but you're not. They're not interested in an active, genuine conversation with you. They just want to poke at you. So why give them the space when all they're interested in doing is making you miserable?
You know, I've heard this come up from a few people. Who at home has seen a pickup truck drive across the QEW or 401 that says F.U. Trudeau? Have you seen one of those before, Jack? Have you seen that, Michael?
One of my neighbors had one, Wolf.
So you're a neighbor. It said just that, F.U. Trudeau?
Yes.
Trudeau? Wow. And
the flag.
What a world. Like, things really, really, really have changed. And let's go now back to your friend, Mr. I'm going to call him Mr. Elon Musk. Jack, you made a very interesting point coming over to the studio about Musk in terms of his, you know, where he sits politically and socially with his belief system.
It's actually hurting his brand. And I was talking to a client saying that they do not want to own Tesla because of some of the stuff that Elon Musk is saying. And he does, I'm going to say, sit on the right side of the spectrum. The reason why he bought Twitter was because he thought there was a lot of censorship going on. It has turned out to be, as far as I can tell, a financial disaster for him. We'll see if he can turn it around. But he's got brand issues, and it's actually affecting Tesla sales, I believe.
Michael?
Market intelligence firm Caliber said that when consumers were asked if they like and trust Tesla and would consider buying one of the vehicles, 70% of respondents said yes in November of 2021. Today, that's down to 31%.
Wow.
And you know this phrase. Germans have a saying that goes, if there's a Nazi at the table and 10 other people sit there talking to him, you've got a table with 11 Nazis.
I don't know. I've never heard the phrase before. Yes, my name's Wolfgang, but I have not heard that phrase before. So very interesting. I was waiting for you to say, if you're at a poker table and you don't know who the sucker is, you're the sucker.
Well, if you're still holding shares of Tesla, yeah, you're definitely in that camp.
The trend truly is your friend, and when they break, they break. So it's I saw a trend break in Tesla. I just could not hold the stock, and thank goodness I moved on. How about Apple, Michael? I think that stock is a short. What do you think?
Oh,
I tell you, it's broken on the chart. Technically, it looks lower.
As a diehard Apple fanboy, I have a very difficult time in admitting this, but yeah. I think you might be right.
Oh, good for you.
The FTC is accusing the tech giant of engineering an illegal monopoly in smartphones that basically locks out the competitors, stifles innovation, keeps the prices artificially high. They're accused of basically making their business relationships such that they extract more money from consumers, developers, content creators, artists, publishers, small businesses, merchants, among others. That's the quote. And what we're talking about here is not just the App Store, where for years people have said, why should Apple get 30% of every sale? It's not just about the Apple Watch and the belief that maybe they stole or poached somebody else's tech for the heart monitoring capability. But what really triggered this FTC investigation was CarPlay. Now, do you have a car that uses CarPlay?
Yes.
If you do, you probably love it, because when I got a car with CarPlay, I found that I didn't have a car that talked to my phone. I had a phone that talked to my car. It was like the car was the accessory, not the phone.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it completely revolutionized the way I have a relationship with my car. Now, what Apple is doing is they want to extend that little, you know, 9-inch screen you've got in your car to the entire dashboard itself, because the next generation vehicles have essentially screens for the entire width of the vehicle on that dashboard. And so instead of just your music and your navigation, now they want to have access to the dials that indicate your speed, your RPMs, your how much gas you've got in the tank. Mm-hmm. And as we know, data is the new oil.
That's it, big data
Apple
they're collecting.
Going to be collecting an incredible amount of that. And the fear is that they're going to have a monopoly power over that kind of data collection. So automobile manufacturers like General Motors and Tesla are saying, we'll never support CarPlay in the future. Others are saying, okay, you go down that path. The rest of us who love CarPlay are going to keep buying cars that support that. So the FTC has stepped in to try to figure out how to deal with this.
Well, the Apple did walk away apparently from its plans of developing a car and has pivoted over into the robot business. We're going to take a quick break. Get back with Michael Hainsworth. He's the contributing editor and host of Where's My Jetpack, formerly from BNN. Just a real tech geek and lots of edge. I like the edge, Michael. Keep it up. Stay tuned. More show right after this.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
Welcome back, my friends. A little Floyd for you. If you by any chance have any old Floyd t-shirts at the bottom of your drawer, do not throw them out. Nope. Vintage is back. You probably paid $10 for that t-shirt. Probably fetched $40 for it. Eh? That's not bad. 300% gain. And you probably wore it for 30 years. A few beer stains on it. What the? Yeah. The holes. If you have a couple holes in it, more valuable. Holes are good. Michael Hainsworth spending some time with us. Hi-Fi Radio show about money. Michael Hainsworth, of course, is a contributing editor and host of Where's My Jetpack? Former
question for you, sir.
Yes, sir.
About Pink Floyd and the t-shirt. Are you a shirt to show type of live music fan? Do you wear the shirt of the band you're going to see that night to that band's show that night?
Moi aussi, no, sir.
No, okay, good. No, I was going to have to disown you otherwise.
I used to leave the show purchasing a shirt, always.
Whole different story.
You
have to buy the shirt.
On the way out. But Michael, I was at a good friend of mine, Jeff Skirka. He owns Classica Imports, and his two boys run BitBuy and
Wonderfy.
And Wonderfy. Anyways, just for fun, he did a vintage clothing sale. Well, his daughter did in the basement of Classica a couple of weeks ago. The place was packed. They managed to get, I think he said something like 15,000 customers or 1,500. A lot of people showed up, purely promoted for free on Instagram and TikTok and whatever else the kids are into. I walked in, Michael, there was an old Who t-shirt with a hole in it. And he said, that's extra. Mm-hmm. With a hole in it. It was navy blue. You know, it was stretched, but it was in reasonable shape. $45. It was a $10 shirt in 1980, my friend. The Who's last concert. Their final tour. A final tour.
Daltrey just turned 80,
by the way. I thought that was pretty cool.
I think when you calculate the inflation on a $10 shirt from 1980, $40 is a steal.
But it's vintage used, man. It's been like torn and tattered. God knows what that person did in that shirt. You don't know. Anyways, my daughter all over the vintage shirts. So I gave her a few of my own. She was very, very pleased. That's pretty funny to see my daughter walk around in daddy's t-shirt. But hey, beats me going out to TJX and buying her some new stuff. But baggy pants as well. They are all the rage. Now, I know you were a skinny pant kind of a guy, Michael, but baggy pants what they want. Your daughter wants a pair of baggy pants. I know she does.
You will pry my skinny jeans yeah. from my cold, dead chicken legs.
Yeah. Yeah, I like skinny jeans. I'm into that, too. I like fashion. I think it's a pretty, pretty cool industry. And there's an industry with no pricing power. It's remarkable. You can buy a suit today, Michael, for the same price you could buy a suit in mid-'80s. You know, the power suits of 1980?
Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk about Meta. That stock looks strong, breaking out. So is Google. Google was starting to wane a little bit, but around the outside, pushing through new highs. So there's two names that are catching my interest right now as Apple and your Tesla trend lower. So what do you think of Meta?
I don't really think too much about Meta these days. My focus is on Meta's attempt to help sink Twitter, back to our Elon Musk conversation, because they did launch that, as we were discussing earlier, Threads, over the course of the summer. And the service is going well. I had like 13,000 followers on Twitter. I've got like 3,000 followers on Threads, but the engagement is substantially higher. One thing that Threads is missing right now is advertising, and that's probably something they'll roll out once they have more features. Threads is missing some basic Twitter-like features like direct messaging capability, the ability to create lists of people you want to follow. The algorithm requires some tweaks, but it's coming along, and it's coming along nicely. The other thing that Meta has managed to do as well is steal some of the thunder from Apple when it comes to the Apple Vision Pro. The Quest 3 headset's been reduced in price. It's literally 7 times cheaper than what Apple is offering at this stage in the game. But as we know, Meta is trying to figure out something beyond just Facebook as a means of revenue generation, and so is Apple. The iPhone is still the vast majority of its sales. It's having trouble selling them in China. They've Correct. Pivoted to new devices like the Apple Vision Pro. But the thing that really gets me about Apple right now, and you sort of alluded to this going into the commercial break, was the prospect of them getting into home robots.
And what do you think of that?
I think it's fraught with risk. Do you have one of those Roomba?
No, the company's iRobot that produces that product. Yeah. And I actually saw them speak at one of our Canaccord growth conferences in Boston. Pretty cool company. And when I was in Europe, I saw a Husqvarna robot lawnmower. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. You know, going around little vineyards, around the vine trees for, you know, grapes. And pretty cool. Husqvarna.
You and I have talked about first mover advantage is not always an advantage.
Correct.
We saw this with Mark Andreessen with Netscape Navigator.
I knew you were going to say
Nobody
that one, yep.
uses that to surf the web.
How about Sony Walkman? What happened to that? That was first mover advantage. They had the market corner with the Walkman. Boy, did they ever drop the ball there, eh?
Bingo. The introduction of the iPod changed that dramatically. And the similar thing has happened for iRobot with their Roomba. They had that first mover advantage. Then all of these cheap Chinese knockoffs came on the market and to a large degree dethroned them. I am an iRobot consumer. I have three of them. I've got Bob, Stuart, and Kevin.
What Kevin? The? Yeah, but just to vacuum your carpet or to clean your gutters as well, because they have a gutter cleaner as well. That thing sort of intrigued me. I don't know, sort of intrigued me.
I've got two vacuums, one for each floor, and then Bob is the robot that does the mopping. And if you've got kids who are into the Minions, you know why I named them the way I did. And they're great when they work, but they don't always work. And the parts for them are limited, if available at all. I had to buy a used wheel off eBay to replace a defective wheel motor system in one of my units. And thank goodness I have the technical skills to pull out a soldering iron and tear things apart and rebuild them, because Roomba didn't want to have anything to do with me. And I've got a friend of mine, Erin Lawrence, is a big tech gadget person. Her website, Tech Gadget Canada, she reviews all of these things. And she's pointed out that Roomba is now taking a back seat to all these other players. So when the idea that Apple wants to come out with its own robot vacuum, one that can climb stairs, as an example, this was Mark Gurman over at Bloomberg who had suggested this is the next big thing for Apple. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. The thing that they're working on right now, allegedly, is more of a desktop device with a camera and a screen that can follow you around the room, like some sort of video conferencing type system as their entry into this. What we do know about Apple is that they are almost never the first to market with a product. And they wait, they step back, they see what works, they see what doesn't. And then they come out with their blockbuster product. It happened, as you pointed out, Sony came out with the Walkman, but it was Apple with the iPhone that revolutionized that space for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, what happened to Motorola? But what about Motorola and Sony both dropped the ball?
On devices, absolutely. Motorola was the one with the flip phone. They're coming back. They've come back with a flip phone that has a foldable screen in the hopes of
the Europeans that love those Europeans. Michael, I saw that foldable screen all over Europe. So you end up with a slightly larger display, but you have to. It looks kind of weird, and I assume that those fold out screens are Android driven product, not Apple driven product. Correct.
Apple has reportedly been contemplating their own device. It may more likely be an iPad that's foldable than an iPhone that's foldable initially. But if there is an investment opportunity within this, it may not be with the companies like Apple and Motorola. It may be with companies like Samsung that are the ones actively developing the thin liquid crystal displays that are capable of bending and folding this way. Apple apparently hasn't released one yet because they're not confident that the crease in the fold is significantly reduced to make it a viable option for them at this point.
Did you get to the Las Vegas Consumer Electronics Show this January, Michael?
First year in 15 years I didn't go.
I'm surprised.
It felt like a little piece of me died.
Yeah, no, because that's obviously where the innovation is. And apparently there's some really interesting new televisions hitting the market that are virtually... you can't see them until you turn them on. I don't know if they're completely transparent or. I'm very intrigued to see what that product's all about. Now, let me come back to Apple. Do you think Apple really has any? I asked you the same question, Jack. Do you think Apple has any business getting into the robot market? Like, quick answer, both of you. Just start with you, Jack.
The robots,
yeah.
Apple. I think if they go into it, I think they'll do it well.
Yeah.
As Michael said, they're never the first mover, but they do tend to improve on what the products that are out there. Very consumer focused. So if they do it, they're not gonna tarnish their brand by putting out some robot that just spins around in circles. We'll say that. So they'll have a good product.
But they're a computer company, a communication company. I understand the robot side of things. Michael, what do you think? Do you think they have a business in that business?
It's going to be low margin, it's going to be high risk, and the reward I don't think is all that great. The day that, like when we were kids, we were promised flying cars, food in pill form, and robot butlers. And what we didn't understand in the Jetsons era was that we didn't need a humanoid-like robot with arms and legs and a head to accomplish tasks. What we needed was special purpose robots. That's why things like Roomba are super successful. That's why you can use a special purpose device to clean your gutters. I don't see a time when we're going to see a humanoid robot climbing a ladder to manually clean gutters when a special purpose robot is perfect for that. You know, the same thing with dishwasher. Why do we need a robot to do our dishes? We have a thing called a dishwasher. It's been functional and useful for us. Maybe we want it to have the ability to put the dishes away. But at the end of the day, the Australians figure that out by just having two dishwashers, one that's dirty and one that's clean.
That's funny. My, oh my. Let's talk for a moment about Hollywood. Many of the cool innovations and ideas that actually end up in market germinated as an idea with a bunch of creative people out in Hollywood. That's my belief. I just think, I mean, obviously you were a Trekkie fan, Michael. If not, I can't see you admit otherwise, but you know, the flip phone, Star Trek, you know, transporter room. We're so not there, but my point is Hollywood comes up with these ideas. 30 years later, they make it to market. So let's just talk. What is Hollywood envisioning about the future right here, right now? Please don't tell me it's a bunch of zombies.
No, I'm not into the zombies either. And you're absolutely right. For example, the engineers at Motorola who came up with the first flip phone actively credit Gene Roddenberry and Star Trek for coming up with that idea and copying it. A lot of that stuff is in fact the case. The one that really gets me, and you sort of touched on this already, is Samsung releasing a 55-inch TV screen that when it's off, it's transparent.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you, but as a big interior design nerd, nothing upsets me more than seeing a giant black rectangle hanging above a fireplace mantle.
Agreed.
Imagine, though, if it wasn't giant black when it was off. So that's part of what I'm about to say, which is you can't watch a Star Trek movie these days, or a Star Wars movie for that matter, without holograms.
Right.
When are we going to get holograms? Chances are we're not getting holograms anytime soon of any real caliber of that Star Wars R2-D2 level. But Samsung, with a transparent TV screen, gets us halfway to that. The question becomes, where's the long-term use for that? Like, it's not going to be in an office environment. You don't want your colleagues seeing you goofing off on YouTube halfway through your workday because they're looking at it from reverse on the other side of the screen.
You know, it's funny. Jack and I came across a company that does corporate presentation, and it really blossomed during COVID. But it was holograms. It was basically images and putting that person on stage. Canadian company, I can't remember the name of it, but very, very good technology is here today. It's remarkable. Michael Ainsworth, always a pleasure, my friend. I cannot thank you enough for your insight and your edge and, your eloquence, shall I say. Former BNN host, now IDC contributing editor and host of Where's My Jetpack. You want to pull that up on your screen and download it on each and every week. Michael, once again, thank you very kindly. We're going to talk more Tesla with our analyst, George Ginnarikas, right after the break. Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
Welcome back, my friends. I know 6:40 is a.m., but listening to that song in stereo, really cool. Put a set of headphones on you. Boom. Boom. Very cool. Good old Rico Kazek, God rest his soul. That record really was good to cover to cover. Playing the cars for George Ginnarikas. He covers Tesla, Michael Hainsworth. Favorite company. You should have been with us on our last hit there, George. We had Michael Hainsworth on. He used to be a host at BNN. He may have interviewed you before on television, I'm not sure, but he's a big tech fan nonetheless, and he loathes Mr. Musk, so we had a lot of fun. But
loathes
fear and loathing Las Vegas loathes. That does not like the man. Not a fan.
Jack, let's do a fact check here, Wolf.
Yeah.
Because Michael claimed that Elon did not found Tesla.
He co-founded it, he said. He said he co-founded it, not founded it.
No, he said he didn't. He said that he put money in to be a co-founder.
Oh, to be a co-founder, right.
So can you maybe talk about the beginnings of Tesla and how Elon was a part of it, George?
Yeah, I mean he is accurate. He didn't found Tesla, but he was a big investor and, you know, basically took over the company when it wasn't going in the right direction and brought it to where it is today.
Okay.
So, I mean, kind of, who cares?
I'm with you, George. I wish Michael was on to try to defend that position. Yeah, you just trumped it, baby. Who cares? You know? And again, it's another example. You don't have to be first to market. You just gotta wait till it's got something you can work with and a bit of a proven record. Not that it had, but very interesting. But the trend on Apple, I know you don't cover Apple, I didn't bring this up because they were actually going to get into the car business and walked away from that. Now they're going to the robot business. But the trend for Apple, I think, is a short, George, just technically speaking. Our analyst, Mike Walk, I'm sure, still likes the stock, and fundamentally it's a good business. But in the short term, the trend is down, not up. And the same goes for Tesla. So what's taking place here? Is the analyst community trying to, you know, defend the position for Tesla? George, you know, where do you see the bottom on the stock? It's obviously not loved right here, right now, and now it's being treated less as a tech stock, more as an automotive stock. And Ford came out with its most recent number. Stock popped. Sales were up 7%. George Ginnarikas, over to you.
So I've covered Tesla for a long time. I think I may have mentioned this to you guys in our previous conversations, but I was on the buy side for many years before this. And, you know, Tesla's performance for a long time was partially responsible, I think, for me losing my hair. It was very, very...
It's all genetics, buddy. Go to Turkey. You get that fixed. Well, go to Turkey. I'll join you.
Inflation's pretty hot over there.
We can go together. We'll get a twofer on it.
you may be genetically predisposed. Let's just say I think Tesla's jagged performance for some time caused an acceleration in what would have happened naturally. Maybe that's the right way to say it. But so I think that, you know, Tesla's performance day to day, month to month, quarter to quarter, it can be very difficult to deal with. And yeah. I understand that, you know, it's stressful and there are periods of ups and downs and depending on whether they're fundamental or not. So look, they reported the deliveries for the quarter. Came in at 387, worse than we thought.
Yeah.
And I would say that, you know, I spent with our team a lot of time parsing through a lot of data to get to our estimate, which ended up being wrong. Okay.
Sure.
Now, what was most interesting to me about the way the quarter finished, at least that we have a couple of just production deliveries that they gave us, right? Was this difference between production and deliveries, which was about 47,000 vehicles, which is the most that has happened in the history of the company, right? Usually they're pretty tight, right? Like it's about 10,000 a quarter for the last 4 quarters. And there ended up being a huge difference, which you can explain in our opinion, one of either two ways, right? So either sales were really bad at the end of the quarter, like the last week and a half, such that they kept making cars and they just couldn't sell them. Or, and we think it's a little bit of both, but or they started ramping production towards the end of the quarter and they couldn't get a lot of the vehicles into people's hands. Now, I don't want to make it sound like Tesla's quarter was great, you know, and there's all supply issues. There are clear pockets of demand weakness across the world. You know, parts of March were bad in China. You know, parts of March, I think, were probably bad in Europe. The U.S. wasn't great. However, the company did have production issues with a couple of key vehicles. For example, they launched a new Model 3 in the United States that they couldn't get to ramp into the production until the end of the quarter. Okay, that was an issue. Like, if people want that car, you go try to buy one in the United States, you have to wait until May to June to get it.
For the Model 3.
And so the new Model, updated Model 3.
Yeah.
The other car that they had, the other production issues they had a fire. Well, they were, quote unquote, this is Elon Musk's quote, eco-terrorists who try to burn down parts of the Gigafactory in Berlin, Germany. So they couldn't get those there. There were issues shipping stuff from China.
Stop. Let's back up. Eco-terrorists. Yeah. This was for a battery plant?
This is for a car production facility in Germany.
So why are the eco-terrorists pointing the finger at, quote-unquote, the green EV companies and not as green as people thought? What's their bone with that one?
That's a great question. I haven't dug exactly into what their beef is, but I think that the facility used way too much energy, which Tesla's responded with and said they use very little water, et cetera. But they had some bone to pick with Elon Musk and Tesla, which they manifested itself in them trying to burn down parts of the factory, at least the power that went to the factory.
That's a pretty wild story, okay? Hey, Jack?
Pretty wild.
Wow. Correct. Hey, what about the Cybertruck? Like, when can I see a Canadian driving the streets with a Cybertruck? And one of our clients bought one, didn't they, Jack? We have a friend.
Yes, but he's down in Arizona.
Oh, in Arizona. Yeah. So when are we going to see a Cybertruck on the road?
Well, that's a really great question. It's part of our point. So you see these production issues with the new Model 3. You see them in Germany. You see them in the Red Sea. It also production issues with the Cybertruck. Not issues. These things take time to ramp, right? So our point is, okay, in bringing all these things up, and we don't know exactly what the numbers are for the others, but for the Cybertruck, we think there are about 3,500 made and delivered in Q1. And the company has told us that they can make 250,000 a year, 62,500 a quarter, which means that they have another, you know, 58,000-ish to go per quarter. The reason why I'm getting into all these details is this. If they could make the new Model 3 at full capacity, if they could make the Cybertruck at full capacity, and you assume people want them, which I do, that makes the quarter look a lot different than it looked. There wouldn't be these stories about, hey, this company's not growing, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not trying to paint the rosiest of pictures because there has been a slowdown.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, no
but
question.
It wouldn't have looked as dire if they could make these cars that people actually want. It's like if you own a restaurant and you have, you know, the old dishes that people don't want, but you launch the McRib, and there's a line out the door before the McRib. You just couldn't make enough. Is McDonald's dying?
No. You know, Harley Davidson was an amazing story. Back in the 90s when there was this resurgence for owning a hog, they truly limited supply. And at the dealer level, there was zero dicker on the pricing, full retail for everything Harley Davidson. And yeah, what a resurgence. It set a second or third life. Of course, it faded. And now I don't think you have any difficulty buying a used hog, and let alone a new hog. Anyways, my friends, it's Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. I'm a portfolio manager along with my partner, Jack Hartle. We help people like you build and maintain and enjoy wealth. Yes, you got to work, save, invest, and repeat that for about 25, 30 years. Then you get to chill and spend some money, but continue to invest it and work it. As it, well, we're in it for the long haul, my good friends. Life expectancy, you're talking early 80s for most people. You need a big cushion underneath that, and we're here to help you build it and maintain it. And part of our job, of course, is to work with people smarter than us who know their sectors and companies inside and out. George Henriquez is one of those individuals. When it comes to the likes of Generac and Tesla and even Rivian Automotive, that's his space. And we're going to spend another hit with George right after this. Stay tuned.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
You got a fast car, and I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove.
Man, he can sing. Santiago, what's his name? Is that Lyle Combs?
Yeah, it's Luke Combs.
Luke Combs. Very good, very good. I love that song. I love that record, of course, by Tracy Chapman. It was just her birthday. I think she just turned 60. She's a fabulous, fabulous singer-songwriter. It's Hi-Fi Radio. I love music, and it makes a boring, dry topic like money, well, a little more digestible, I believe. And maybe some mnemonic recalls as Jack and I share our wisdom with you. And again, the most important thing, if you want to build wealth, you got to work, and you got to save, and you must invest it. You really have to do all three things. Okay, if you win the lottery, then you can keep saving and investing. But for the most part, no. Work, save, invest, repeat. Every single time you get paid, money aside for a rainy day, for your future, for to pay off a house or to build a down payment. You can do it, folks. $5 a day for 40 years. Invested in, you know, broad index market, about $750,000. I said $5 a day can be $750,000. $10 a day is $1.5 million. $20 a day is $3 million. Okay, are we getting somewhere? $20 a day, $3 million in 40 years. Not bad. If you're 25, you can save $20 a day. Do it. And we can help you. Never hesitate to reach out to us. WolfgangKlein.com, TheWolfOnBayStreet.com, of course, Jack. My partner, when people work with us, they end up with two portfolio managers. It's amazing. We do great work. We really, really, you know, you don't believe me? Go on the website, wolfgangklein.com, wolfonbaystreet.com, and take a look at the performance and our new quant strategy. George, you want to pay attention to this one here. We built a quant strategy, and it took me, honestly, two decades to come up with it and get confident in actually using it. And it's something I worked on. I put it on the shelf. Pulled it off the shelf, dusted off, worked on it again. Sort of like a model airplane that you never finished. But we got to see if this bird can fly. So a year ago, we put it to test. 25 stocks in the S&P 500. And go to our website, George. You take a look at the numbers. Your jaw will drop. It's benchmarked against the S&P 500, the index that they say you can't beat. I say nonsense. 12-month return, George, 39% USD. And no Tesla in it. Right, Jack? No Tesla.
It has not held Tesla. It may, though, because it's within the S&P 500, so it may.
It is,
if it meets our screens.
It is a component of the S&P, right?
Yes,
yeah,
I believe it is.
Yeah. What about Rivian? Here's a name, thank God I stayed away from, George. Your story was compelling. You got Jack pretty excited about the stock. Obviously, they make an EV truck, but not so easy. They're showing us not so easy. So where is Rivian at? And, what's the good, the bad, the ugly on the story?
So Rivian there over the last, call it 12 to 18 months, there's been a slowdown in auto demand and a slowdown probably a little bit more exacerbated recently in EV demand, right? And for the most part throughout 2023, Rivian had escaped that. You know, it really didn't talk about as much of a slowdown in overall demand. They had a huge order book that they were working through because people had been waiting for their vehicles for some time. And then in, you know, on their last conference call, which took place in January, they started, you know, this EV cold, you had caught up, they caught the sniffles.
EV cold.
They caught a little bit of that, and it impacted their stock, particularly because they had been, it appeared they had been immune from it, so to speak, and now they talked about, you know, some weakening demand for their vehicles, particularly because they're not cheap, at least the ones that are out there now. So the reason why, so look, here's the thing, that two things that we believe strongly. Okay, we believe over time, even though there seems to be a lot of skepticism in the marketplace today, that EVs will dominate auto sales, you know, over the, you know, in the foreseeable future. Is it 5? Is it 7? Is it 8 years? I don't know exactly. It's hard to tell, but it is a superior driving experience in a superior vehicle. Okay? And so ultimately, as long as costs can come down, you know, usually the better product wins. And so if you believe that that's the truth,
do you believe that to be the truth? Is EV actually better to drive?
Without a doubt.
Really? Okay.
Without a doubt.
Really?
They're safer, they're better. Yes. Yes.
They're safer?
Yes.
How so? Yes. How are they safer?
They're safer. Well, let me give you a perfect example. I mean, with the EVs, in the middle of the vehicle, if there's a side impact in an internal combustion engine vehicle, there's nothing, there's no beam there to safeguard you. I mean, the car will crunch, okay? Because that's where the engine is. I mean, you literally, right in the middle of it. Well, in the EV, the engines are actually right next to the wheels, or the motors, I should say. They're not engines. And so you get to put a beam there, which helps protect you from side impact.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Very, very interesting.
They accelerate as soon as you put your pedal down, right? And so they're faster. They'll take a 911 off the line. As a matter of fact, the Cybertruck can take a 911, Porsche 911 off the line while towing a Porsche 911.
Huh. So, wow. Yeah, I remember when I was in Germany, I think it was in Berlin, they were having a, I think it may have been sponsored by BMW, an e-Formula One event. It looked pretty, pretty cool. And this is about 10 years ago. So without question, coming a long way. But you're also hearing companies backing away from their EV business. I think Mercedes-Benz recently are saying they're backing off from EV. So again, this game is not over. It'll be interesting to see when it turns into a handful of players dominating the space, you know, the big three. We'll see. And George, you're a great man. George Enriquez, our sustainability analyst who covers the likes of Rivian and Tesla. We never got a chance to speak about Generac. I'm surprised more blackouts didn't occur in the last 24 hours here in Toronto. It's a bit of a blistery start to April. But hey, April showers bring May flowers. And the good news is it's a bull market. Market tends to do well in April. New quarter. And the earnings are going to start to kick in on Wall Street late next week. And that should get the juices flowing. And do not fret, my good friends. I said it's a bull market. There's only two positions to be. You can be hold or buy. But you do not exit here. Unless you need to, of course. And you need to sell to the sleeping point. But long-term investors. No, this is good. Good time. So let's enjoy it. Have a great weekend. Please, any questions, never hesitate to reach out to Jack or I, WolfgangKlein.com, TheWolfAndBayStreet.com. We're here for you. Truly are. And it's a complex world, and we're here to simplify it and show you how we can help you build wealth. Slow, steady Eddie wins the race. Love you.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.